Okay, so we started yesterday to try to get some kind of a basic understanding of what it is that the Torah obligates us in regards to Kiddush. That the mainstream understanding is that Kiddush is an obligation min haTorah, and that it emanates from the Aseret HaDibros themselves, from Zachar, from Shabbos, the Kadsho. However, how exactly that process works, there was a lot to be determined, and we noted that our practice of Kiddush nowadays, or however broadly we want to define it, is going to involve a recitation, is going to involve specific phrasing in the recitation, such as the notion of Kedusha Shabbos, and of it being a good thing, of praising Shabbos. It is going to also involve bracha, is going to involve a cup of wine, tasting from the wine, is going to involve makom suda, is going to involve another kiddush during the daytime, and havdalah as well. So how much of that is min haTorah is very unclear. Quite a extensive range of opinions. We mentioned that one sefer counted 15 different views on this question, and we were trying to look at it all holistically, so to try to understand how we could fit these all, or some of them, or any of them, within the notion of what the Torah is getting at when it says Zachar Shem Shabbos Mekadesho. And one of the major points of contention was wine, that when it comes to wine, so we saw that there were some Rishonim that seemed to take the Gemara in our parak literally, that when the Gemara says Zachar Shem Shabbos Zachareyu Al Hayayin, is that an actual interpretation of the pasuk itself? It was hard for us to see where it is in the word, but it does seem like some of the Rishonim did take that position, while the majority probably understood it to be an asmachta and understood it not to be the literal interpretation of the pasuk. Should also note that Tosfos in our parak on Daf Kuf Vav, which in general is associated with the idea that this is an asmachta, this is a din midrabanan, but in the last few lines, Tosfos does add another possibility that it could be that yayin itself is min haTorah, zachreyu al hayayin, but the idea of mevarech tarech sheyito, the idea that we should taste from the wine, that's midrabanan, and that's also interesting to understand exactly where that distinction should come from, the notion of making a bracha al hakos, and yet that the wine should be tasted is clearly secondary in that understanding. That's also something to explore. There are some who suggest that as far as our difficulty in seeing how the pasuk could teach us yayin, we don't see that word there. Some relate it to other psukim, psukim menach, a pasuk in Hosea, where you find zechira and yayin connected. You would need a whole process of transitive property to go from one to the next. And some understand essentially it's halacha l'moshe Sinai, that the Torah tells us this obligation of zechira. And we understood through tradition that that means with wine. Now, there is an interesting discussion, just to kind of give a little bit of an example of how this could be framed, that there is a tshuva, and the tshuva is Mosnei Tzedek, a contemporary sefer by Rachel Zilber, where he discusses this question of whether yayin is min haTorah or not. And he suggests, as we implied, that it goes to the question of what the mitzvah of zechira is. Right, that question of how to translate the word, how to understand the halachic implication of the word, is an important question, clearly a fundamental question. We mentioned yesterday that there are a number of mitzvahs of zechira, at least four, maybe more. And they have very different practices, lahalacha, as far as what's involved. So to understand how to translate that word in the context of our pasuk is already a challenge, but it's also significant that it's not the only word that Zachar Shem Shabbos Mekadesho. Mekadesho probably comes to tell us something about how to understand this zechira. So as one example of an approach, the Mosnei Tzedek discusses that we could understand Zechiras HaShabbos to mean that we should remember that it's Shabbos. And in this context, it's interesting to note, this was one of the other questions I asked you to pay attention to, if you look at Rashi or the Ramban or the Ibn Ezra, on the Pasuk that we're coming from, the Pasuk of Zachar, some of Shabbos Lekadsho, how do they understand the mitzvah? How do they describe its main focus? Right, well, we get the impression from Rashi, for example, just look at Rashi on the page in the Chumash, that it's not really about Kiddush. That Kiddush is maybe a detail of it, but that the mitzvah is to remember Shabbos literally through the week. And that when somebody sees something that might be helpful towards the purposes of preparing for Shabbos, so then he should buy that and he should have in mind that this is for Shabbos. Or like the Ramban emphasizes, that it's about counting all the days during the week from the framework of Shabbos, having a mentality that Shabbos is different and distinct. So it's noteworthy that looking at the Mefarshim on Chumash, it seems like the Pasuk is not specifically focused on telling us a mitzvah of Kiddush in particular, and we mentioned that the Bahag doesn't even count Kiddush as a mitzvah min HaTorah, and understands the whole mitzvah to be an Asmachta, not just wine and aspects like that. But certainly doesn't seem to be from the basic Mefarshim on Chumash and many of the Drashas Chazal that it is particularly focused on Kiddush as its main theme. That the awareness that we have of Shabbos in general is what this mitzvah is telling us, and that takes many different forms. So one suggestion that he had is that we could understand Zachar Shema Shabbos Lekadsho to be simply remember that Shabbos is there. In which case, he suggests, and here is really where there could be room to see things in many different ways, but just the way he formulates it, that if the idea is to remember that Shabbos is there, so then that's the theme of the mitzvah throughout. But on Shabbos day itself, it's going to take a different kind of form. Because then it's right in front of you. It's one thing when you're shopping on Monday, and you got to remember that, okay, it's going to be Shabbos this week. So then there's an extra step to recall Shabbos' existence. But when you're in Shabbos, so the idea of remembering Shabbos is going to require an extra step. So what that extra step is, hold on 1 second. Okay, sorry about that. So the idea that there is a mitzvah specifically to remember that it's there, so on Shabbos itself it's going to take a different form. And in his version, in the most ascetic version, so then the idea that wine could be an obligation in HaTorah is going to come from that, because on Shabbos itself, when the day is in front of you, to have an obligation still to remember it, that's going to require not just saying something, but actually calling attention to its specialness. And therefore, that's where the wine comes in. Now again, to say that the Pasuk is still spelling out specifically wine, still need either a Masorim from Sinai or a understanding from other places in Tanakh, and also to take it further and to extend it to pas, the bread, that if we assume that bread and wine are equally viable, which is a theme in this week's parsha in a sense, that, come back to that later, but that if you assume that wine and pas are equally viable, so then to say that pas also fulfills this role of a enhanced zechira tells us that Shabbos is special. All right?
Can you explain again why we would need wine to show that Shabbat itself today is different? Because for Rashi, Rashi says it's all about preparing food for Shabbat, then the difference on Shabbat itself is eating the food instead of saving it. And for the Ramban, it says it's accounting. Instead of saying it's the sixth which goes, doesn't say, no, it's the sixth which goes into the Yom Shabbat Kodesh. So that would seem to be the differentiation. Why would we need additionally that wine that just emphasizes?
So you're saying that once you already have the food that you bought that was special for Shabbos, so then once you're eating special food, so then already if that should all the more so be the reminder. Although it's an interesting question, it's a little bit subjective, because you could say, all right, so going out of your way to make this available during the week, that is what identifies Shabbos as prominent in your mind. Once it's already there and you're eating the food that you have, so then you might still need an extra level in order to bring it to mind. Well, I certainly would agree that it's a somewhat of a subjective assessment, that the whole approach requires a little bit more of an accepting of certain premises, which might be a little bit arguable. But it's also the notion that the yayin has a specific role in making that special, also something that we see we have to kind of push a little bit to find the exact basis for it. Maybe that's why so many of the Rishonim seem to assume it was an asmata, but that's all a part of the premise of trying to work to understand that. But I certainly hear where you're coming from, that there is some degree of subjectivity in terms of how you're going to see this contributing to the point. The other possibility that he suggests that would make wine less of a fundamental obligation is that you would interpret the pasuk of Zachar, Zom HaShavah's Likadisho, to mean not that you should remember Shabbos, but that you should remember to be Mekadesh Shabbos. So that the act of designating Shabbos as separate, similar to Hektish in general, when you declare an animal to be Kodesh, and what is necessary in order to do that, which is really a lower level of involvement, all you have to do is even think it, or certainly just say it, should be enough. So perhaps that's also how we would understand the mitzvah of Kiddush, as Zachar Sam Shabbos Kadesh, and therefore the Amira alone should be significant. Again, it's a somewhat subjective interpretation of what these different understandings lead you to, but just the notion of these different possibilities is so valuable for us to think about. We mentioned yesterday that this also could be where Havdalah comes in, that the idea that Havdalah is Minhag Torah, which is the view of the Rambam, and maybe a few other Rishonim, that Havdalah is included in Zachar Yisrael Mishabbos Lekadesho. Should mention that, you know, most would say Havdalah is Drabanan. There's an in-between opinion. If you look at the Migdalos, look at some of the Mepharshim of the Rambam, there are some who say that Havdalah is Minhag Torah from other sources. But especially if we assume that Havdalah is min ha-Torah from Zachar Yisrael Mishabbos Lekadesho, and that's how the Rambam understands it, so then it makes sense to say that we are roping off the day, that we are designating the day both before and after in order to note that this day is separate. You may recall, we spoke about a few months ago when we talked about Tosafot Shabbos, and we noted that there's a little bit of a challenge for the Rambam's view. Because when we talked about the Tosafot Shabbos, to give a little chazar, if you recall, so there was the basic question of whether Tosafot Shabbos means that Shabbos actually starts early, or does it mean that Shabbos starts when it starts, but we abstain from halacha earlier in order to create a buffer zone. So the problem was, especially for the Rambam, because within those two possibilities, so the major difference between them was whether the mitzvos that are obligatory on Shabbos or in any individual yontif could be fulfilled during this time of Tosafot. So the problem is that when it comes to Kiddush, the Gemara says black on white in Brachos that you can recite Kiddush while it's still light outside. So it seems very clear that you should be able to recite Kiddush during the time of Tosafot. So how do you account for that if you believe Shabbos hasn't started? And all the more so for the Rambam, because the Rambam is in the minority regarding Tosefta Shabbos, that he doesn't acknowledge it at all in Mishneh Torah. Some understand that he understands it to be a mitzvah d'rabbanan, which is still difficult because Kiddush as an obligation min ha-Torah should presumably require Shabbos min ha-Torah. And even that is more than we see in the Rambam. The Rambam doesn't mention Tosefos at all. So if Tosefos is d'rabbanan, or especially if it's nothing, how does he account for the fact that you can make Kiddush while it's light outside? So we mentioned at the time the approach that Shechter quotes from the Soloveitchik, and he added to it and expanded upon, that Kiddush doesn't have to be on Shabbos, actually. Which is clear from the language of the Rambam, that Kiddush should be adjacent to Shabbos, near the beginning of Shabbos, but not necessarily on Shabbos itself. And that, he explains, in conjunction with the idea that Kiddush is about identifying Shabbos as an intentional day. That the fact that we abstain from Malacha is not an accident, it's not that we have nothing to do, but it's that this is an intentional religious practice. And he connected this to what the Rambam writes in the context of Muksa. That the Rambam gives his own suggestion as to why it is that Chazal made the institution of Muksa, that we should handle objects differently on Shabbos than the rest of the week. And the Rambam writes, it's because one might think that an individual who's not doing Malacha maybe just doesn't have anything to do. And in order to emphasize that it's intentional, we need, it's called a Shvisa Hanikaris, that it should be that the rest on Shabbos is visible, is discernible. So therefore, this added practice of Muksa was there to show that things are being done differently on purpose. So in that spirit, the idea of Kiddush serves as an announcement that the Malachos are being abstained from deliberately. And that doesn't necessarily have to be on Shabbos itself. It can be near Shabbos, near the beginning of Shabbos. A little bit after it starts, a little bit before it starts. But it'll serve the same purpose. Everybody with me so far? I recall this point we mentioned in that context of Tosefta Shabbos. Now to tie this in also to something we mentioned yesterday, so Rav Shechter, between them, they explained that was also behind the drasha that we discussed yesterday on Brachos and Dav Chaf and the Beis. And if the Gemara says that there is this unique relationship between Zachar and Shomer, and that whoever is obligated in Shomer and Shmira Shabbos and abstaining from Malacha is obligated in Zechira Shabbos. So the Gemara in Brachos brought that to teach that there is an obligation of Kiddush for women as well, on the same level, Kiddush Dvar Torah for women. But probably one would have thought that that's just an example. But that really the idea of Kol She'yeshno B'Shmira, Yeshno B'Zechira, is to say that it's all one package deal. Whoever is obligated in the Los Asays of Shabbos and the Isra Malacha is obligated in the essays, is obligated in all of the positive mitzvahs. Probably the more intuitive way to understand it. It's a package deal. Shabbos is not broken up into different parts. You're either in or you're out. If you're obligated in the Los essays, you're obligated in the essays also. But the question is that how everybody understands it? So there was a machlokas regarding Shal Shuddis. Are women obligated in Shal Shuddis? So this was a Machlokas Rishonim, two opinions, yes and yes. Now, according to Rabbeinu Tam and the Ran, they are obligated in Shal Shuddis. The question is why? They both say yes. The Ran quotes Rabbeinu Tam in the 16th Parak of Shabbos as maintaining that the reason is because of another sugya that we spoke about this year, more chazara synergy opportunity. Afein hayuv also hanes. That if you have a mitzvah that is about a miracle, and the miracle will apply to the broader population, so then the mitzvah should as well. So what's the nace in this case, the shal shudas? A man. The Gemara tells us that there is a symbolism of the sudos on Shabbos to the man. So since afein hayuv also a nace, so therefore women are obligated in shal shudas too. And the Ran understands that, no, it's because of the Prusha, called Sheyeshna B'Shmira, Yeshna B'Shira. It's all one package. So we both say yes for different reasons. Shlomo Kluger has a tshuva where he says it's like a Western shootout, that they basically, the two reasons shot each other, so it comes out that they're not obligated in Shal Shudas, even though both opinions say yes. Bavaji Yosef has a tshuva, he says that's not how we understand it, that assume that if I will show them say yes, the answer is yes. The question is just why? But the position of Rabbeinu Tam is interesting because it seems like the Ran is more intuitive. That probably kol she'eshno v'shmira yeshno v'schira means Shabbos is a package deal. So why should we single out Kiddush for Rabbeinu Tam to say that the Gemara means that it's specifically Kiddush that's connected to the Malachos and not other positive mitzvot of Shabbos? So that is consistent with this explanation that there is a particular relationship between Kiddush and the Malachos. And that Kiddush serves to tell us why the Malachos are there. That Kiddush is an announcement about the Malachos, and therefore they're linked that way. Okay, so far so good? So that idea that Havdalah is a part of this obligation, we could understand it that way, that if we want to show that this is a special zone, so it makes sense that before and after, we're going to have this declaration, okay? Power on, power off, here it is, the beginning and the end. It's interesting to note that Rav Kook, in the comments that were published in Maseches Pesachim and Daf of Beis, in our parak, that Rav Kook understood that the way he read the Shitas HaRambam is that when we say b'chnisoso v'yitzioso, that the zechira is at the beginning and at the end, that really it means it could be either one. That one or the other would make that point. It's not that min haTorah you need both Kiddush and Havdalah. When we say that the Rambam's position is Havdalah is min haTorah, wouldn't mean that min haTorah you're required to do both Kiddush and Havdalah. It's that either one could work. And that this notion is consistent with this idea of designating the day, or announcing about the day, that it could happen either at the front end or the back end. However, since Midrabanan were required to do both, I mean, at Torah you could do one or the other, I mean, Midrabanan you do both, this is a little bit reminiscent of our first sugya of B'dikas Chametz and Dittel, right, in review of Ran. For example there, that Minhag Torah, it's one or the other, and Midrabanan, it's both. So maybe you have a similar structure here, that Minhag Torah, it would be either Kiddush or Havdalah, and Midrabanan would do both. So then, if we keep up that practice, so it means, practically speaking, that Havdalah would always be Midrabanan. Because since we did make Kiddush, so then the obligation to make Havdalah is now only Drabbanan. Had we not been making Kiddush, so then Havdalah could be Daraisa, as the one mentioned. But in practice, if we are making Kiddush, it's going to leave Havdalah as Drabbanan. All right?
Could you just repeat that, why we would say that you only needs to do one, or it's just
for Rambam? So the way he's understanding, the way Rav Kook is understanding the Rambam, is that the idea is to identify the day as special, And if that's the case, you can identify it at either end. To give maybe another, I don't know how much this is parallel, but just another opportunity for synergy in Chazar, we talked about Sfira HaOmer. There was a view in the Gaonim that we don't rely on, but Gaonim had the opinion that you could mark the day of Sfira HaOmer already into the next day. You know, and say, last day, yesterday was 10, and tonight is 11. So it's a little bit parallel, maybe a stretch, but a little bit parallel to the idea of identifying a day from one boundary to the other, either before or after. So that's his understanding here, that the mitzvah of Zohar is a mishab sakacho, the notion that we'd say that it has these two aspects, the chnisoso and the yitzioso, that would mean that one or the other would accomplish this goal. But not necessarily you have to do both. Then midrabanan Chazal required us to do both. And once you're doing both, it's going to mean that practically speaking, Havdalah is always going to be midrabanan. But it could have been the HaTorah. And we'll see also, by the way, there's a similar structure regarding Kiddush during the daytime. Kiddush during the daytime, we assume, is midrabanan. And that's what we kind of sarcastically call it, or ironically, Lashon Saginor, we call it the big Kiddush, Kiddush Rabbah. Not because of the Chalantin Shul, it's because it's a little bit of a ironic reference to the fact that it's less obligatory than Kiddush at night. But one of the 15 opinions here is Maharam Rutenberg, who understood it to be also included in the mitzvah of Zechiras HaShabbos. If you've seen the Gemaras here, you see that the Gemara did work to try to figure out exactly what we're talking about when we say Zohar Shem HaShabbos HaKadosho. So theoretically, one could also have a similar structure. If one misses Kiddush Friday night, so then the status of that Kiddush during the daytime could take on a different importance. Even though normally that's a obligation with Rabbanan. So that's also something to keep in mind. All right, everyone so far. So far so good. Everyone with me? Okay, so let's consider now another element here that is pretty significant and one of the major topics in our parak. The idea of Kiddush B'Makom Suda. So is that part of the obligation in HaTorah? Is that an obligation with Rabbanan? Where does that fit in? What is your sense about Kiddush Makom Suda? Zach?
Well, it could be, we saw that there's a source written in Yeshayahu, so maybe it's the Rekabon.
Okay, so that's one thing. So that's interesting, the Chlal. There's a lot to say about that. And this topic, the topic of Kiddush Makom Suda, we're going to have to get into much more detail, God willing, next week, because also the parameters and a lot of details and technicalities of what Makom Suda means. So it happens to be a major topic in and of itself. So God willing, we will talk about that in much more detail. But just to give a very surface introduction to it, so Zach pointed out the Pasuk in Yeshayahu. So first of all, there's a lot interesting about that, because so much interesting about that. First of all, the Drasha that he's referring to appears in the Rishonim. The Rishonim explain where this comes from, which is already interesting. So they had some Masorah on this. There's actually two versions of it, which probably have different implications. And then, as Zach is bringing up, what is the impression one gets from the fact that it is a pasuk? If it is the case, if it's a pasuk in Yeshayahu, so how do we categorize that? Does that mean that it's midivrei Kabbalah? It has some kind of a in-between status, not from the Torah itself, but not really Drabanan either. And we've discussed in the past that divrei Kabbalah itself, how to relate to that, that there is a heavy view in the later sources that we treat Divrei Kabbalah like Dinim and Torah. Was most influentially promoted by the author of the Shagas Aryeh in his Sefer Turei Evin. And that became kind of a dominant view in the later generations, even though there are probably many indications from the Rishonim that Divrei Kabbalah are not treated like Dinim and Torah. But the later generations, many poskim taking the lead of the Turei Evin, work off this premise that it's aligned with the Gemara and Rosh Hashanah, but it's in a different context. Divrei Kabbalah, Kidivrei Torah Dami. So is this a new din from Yeshayahu? Is this just an explanation of the pasuk and its parameters of Zafir Shemeshav Sakacho? So that's very interesting, but the pasuk under discussion, which is always important to emphasize here because this is one of the major themes of Shabbos too. So, or two of the major themes. So as the Rambam writes in Mishneh Torah, just a little bit of background about this, that there are essentially four themes of Shabbos, two in the Chumash and two in the Divrei Kabbalah. So in the Chumash we have Zachar and Shomer. And with Divrei Kabbalah, we have Oneg and Kavod, which are, from that pasuk, the Karos of the Shabbos Oneg, in Yeshayahu, which, ironically, that's the source for the obligation of having meals on Shabbos. Parenthetically, if you notice this past week's parsha, there was a whole discussion, parsha Spalosha, the pasuk that says the Yom Simchaschem in Chazal Havadrasha, that refers to Shabbos. And there's a whole discussion about that in the later Svarim because we normally assume that Shabbos is not about Simcha. That Simcha is a Yontif concept and that Shabbos is about Oneg. And whether they cross over at all is a question. So is there Simcha on Shabbos? It's a question that Drasha and Haloscha confounds things a bit. And it could be Oneg is only by Shabbos and not by Yontif. We've mentioned it past in my favorite trivia questions. Svarim that may not exist. The Shuvas Oneg Yontif is a questionable existence because there's such a thing as Oneg Yontif. So that's a little bit of a question. So for Shabbos, we know we have Oneg. So one of the two themes, Oneg and Kavod, those are the two themes that the Divrei Kabbalah tell us. So ironically, that's the source for a Suda on Shabbos. And one time we read that as a Haftarah on Shabbos is when the one time we're not eating on Shabbos. It's from the Haftarah for Yom Kippur. So if Yom Kippur falls out on Shabbos, so then we read that Haftarah on Shabbos, and it's kind of taunting us. It says, the Karos of Shabbos Oneg. That's a source that you have to eat on Shabbos, and we read that on the one Shabbos when we're not eating. Okay, but in any event, so that's, we understand, the whole notion of Oneg, we do understand to be the Divrei Kabbalah. So the question is, as far as the particular application to Kiddush Makom Suda, it's an interesting question. So first of all, just to note that the Rishonim has two different versions of the Drasha. And this is something we'll expand upon when we get into the Sugya head on. But the idea of the Karasa, the Shabbos, Oneg, either we should say B'makom Kriya, Shamtehe Oneg, or B'makom Oneg, Shamtehe Kriya. So does that mean that the Makom Kriya, the place where you make Kiddush, that's where you should have your Suda? That's where the Oneg should happen? Or is it the other way around, that the Makom Oneg, in the place of the Suda, that's where the Kriya should happen? That's where the Kiddush should take place? So that's going to yield a whole discussion, God willing, we should get to, of is it a din in Suda, that there should be the Kiddush there, or is it a din in Kiddush, that the Kiddush needs the Suda? Now, the idea that it's the second one, that the Kiddush needs the Suda. So some understand that that essentially becomes an extension of the day of the idea of Yayin. And you find that Lashon, that once we say Zochareyu ala Yayin, so maybe that also doesn't just mean random wine, but it means wine of Chashivas, i.e. the wine that is a part of the Suda. So it's possible to understand the whole notion of Kiddush B'Makom Suda as an extension. Once you can entertain the idea that Yayin is Minatar, you can also entertain the idea that Makom Suda is part of that, that that's the definition of the kind of wine that we're talking about. And that's an interesting possibility as well. Now also, to speak somewhat generally about a topic that we will, God willing, say more about, presumably next week, but the Gemara gets into this in the context of Kiddush and Shul, which is a major topic I'd like to explore with you at greater length. But the question of why we make Kiddush and Shul nowadays, and I say we, not everybody, they're different than Hagim about this, but the shuls that do make Kiddush and Shul Friday night, which is more prevalent in Chutz La'aretz than it is in Eretz Yisrael, it's also a whole discussion in Eretz Yisrael, far less common, as the Mechaber has said, to make Kiddush and Shul nowadays. So that's the whole discussion we'll have to have, but the Gemara tells us about it under a different premise. But the Gemara in our parak, if you had a chance to see, so the Gemara talks about making Kiddush in Shul for the Orchim. That the assumption was that there are people who were in need of a meal, and they were eating in Shul, so therefore Kiddush is recited on their behalf. Which then prompts the whole question, okay, nowadays, so if that's not the reality, if we don't have people eating in shul, so why does that minute continue? Seems to be a problem, as the Rishonim already called attention to. And yet, it's a very widespread minute. So, God willing, we'll explore that in more detail, but just what's relevant for us now is that the issue is, what about Kiddush B'Makom Suda? And how exactly can the Kiddush fulfill anything if there's no meal happening there? So in the time of the Gemara, there was a meal happening there. Okay, so then you made Kiddush on their behalf. Now, it's interesting, and as Rishonim discussed, if you had a chance to see the Rush, he talks about it, that the person making Kiddush, if he was a gabbai of the shul, a chazan of the shul, so he's got a house to go to, presumably. So he himself is not having his suda in shul. And yet, he is making Kiddush. So that tells us something interesting, just to also bring another point to synergy. We talked about Shemaya Ka'oneh. And so we know that normally the person who is being motzi others in a mitzvah has to be mechuyev b'davar, has to be somebody who is obligated. So here, this is a little bit of a problem, one would think, because the one who's actually making Kiddush is not being yotze with this Kiddush. It's not effective for him. He's not having his meal there. And yet, apparently that still works. Apparently he can make Kiddush on behalf of the people who are eating there. And that is an extension of the idea of Arvus. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah tells us, and that's what says, I call Yisrael a raisin zebazah, that it's a beautiful idea in its broader application, but in its more narrow application, it also a beautiful idea. What it means is that it's a detail of Shemaya Ka'oneh, that the requirement that the one being motzi other people be obligated. So you might say, okay, but let's say if somebody wants to blow shofar in a hospital after he already went to shul on Lashon the morning, or he wants to have this with everybody who was in the quarantine over Rosh Hashanah or the like, or a Purim, if somebody wants to read Megillah for people after he's already heard. So why don't we say, no good, you're already your Yotze, you're not obligated twice, you're not Mechuyah. So the answer is Arvus. Arvus is what allows one who is not right now obligated, but is an individual who is theoretically obligated, to carry that mitzvah over on behalf of those who are in need of it right now. So here we find it another application. It's different. We're not just saying that, okay, you just don't need to do it twice. We're saying that here you haven't done it yet. And right now you don't have the circumstances available to you. And nonetheless, apparently still Arvus works. So the local who's making Kiddush and Shul on behalf of the guests, he's considered Mechuyav B'Dagar, even though he's not obligated right now, and it's even more than that. It's not just somebody blowing shofar a second time. Somebody who doesn't have the circumstances right now to be open. But still, his personal obligation is enough. You know, there are some who thought you could bring this in as a possible proof. You know, we very much encourage everyone to consider the rabbinate, if you're appropriately inclined, to consider that as a service to Klal Yisrael. But there are some challenges that come with a rabbinate, which they don't speak about often enough, is the fear that maybe you'll miss a day of Sfiras HaOmer, and then when it's your job to count on behalf of the shul, so you're going to have to announce to the whole shul, whoops, sorry, I'm out, I missed a day, I can't be the one to count. So that's embarrassing. So people don't think about that when they consider how hard it is to be a shul rabbi. So one possible suggestion to save the rabbi from this embarrassment is that if he's being mostly people in shul, that maybe he can still count on their behalf because he's doing it for them. And that maybe it could be compared to the one making Kiddush in shul who right now doesn't have a Makom Suda. But nonetheless, his Kiddush is still good on their behalf because he's technically obligated. So maybe the rabbi too, if he's being mostly people in Sfira, so that technical obligation could be enough to make the bracha on their behalf, even though he doesn't have, so to speak, like the Makom Suda, he doesn't have the whole sphere of package to make his mitzvah work. So in any event, that was Bizvanehem. Okay, so they make a Kiddush and Shul on their behalf. And it's a Kiddush to say that the local can do it, but fine, that's what emerges from the Gemara, as the Rishonim explained. But the Rishonim also ask, but what about nowadays? So nowadays, if we don't have any guests in shul, so what's the point in making kiddush? So one suggestion is, well, maybe it's true that you cannot provide the whole package of kiddush in shul. If there's no suda happening there, so then you're not going to help somebody completely fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush. But what if there are people in shul who are not going to make Kiddush at home? So should you at least say, listen, we'll give them something. If we make Kiddush in shul, so then it won't be everything, but at least the mitzvah and the Torah they'll get. They'll get some part of the mitzvah. So maybe it's worth it for that. Right, so if you saw the Rush in Siman Hey, the Rush quotes Rabbeinu Yonah to that effect, that Kiddush Makom Suda is not an obligation in that Torah, as you saw it. So therefore, why should we say all or nothing? Why don't we just say, okay, if there are people in Shul who may not be making Kiddush at all, so then let's at least make Kiddush for them there, and they'll get the mitzvah min haTorah of Kiddush. So that was a discussion. It's interesting, and there's extensive literature about the implications of this Rabbeinu Yonah, because to go back on something that we spoke about a number of times throughout this year, right from the beginning of the year throughout, the whole question of whether a Din D'Rabbanan redefines a mitzvah min haTorah and makes it no longer possible to fulfill it without the rabbinic modification. So here Rabbeinu Yonah seems to be saying that it doesn't, that the mitzvah min haTorah is still there, and even if you're not yotzei the mitzvah min haTorah, you, as you can be going out yotzei the mitzvah min haRabbanan, you can still be yotzei the mitzvah min haTorah. So let's provide a kiddush for these people even without the makom suda. Now the Rosh himself disagrees. And the interesting question is why he disagrees. Right? So you saw this, the Rosh at the end especially pointed out the most interesting part of the whole Rosh that was in touch, but at the end, this discussion is particularly significant. That the Rosh says, no, it doesn't sound like you can break it in half. That it sounds like we say, Kiddush, not Pemakom Suda, you're not Yotze. It sounds like you're not Yotze at all. And so that Rosh is quoted to the effect that Kiddush Pemakom Suda is a Din Min HaTorah. Now here, and we'll look at it together if we want to open it up. So it's interesting just to speculate why that should be. Right, so how do you get to the conclusion that Kiddush Pemakom Suda is a Din Min HaTorah? Well, you could say that that's svara, that if you're willing to accept the Ayin Min HaTorah, then maybe we mean not just any random wine, but the wine of the Suda. It's one possibility. Or you could say that it means because of this drasha from the Pasuk in Yeshayahu that the Rishonim have, that comes to define it as the Makom Oneg Shom Tehei Kriya. Or you could say that Chazal redefined it, that in the Chanami, that it's Midrabanan, but that Min HaTorah, it no longer exists without it. Now, there are some who suggest, and in some ways this is more compelling and maybe in some ways less compelling, but there are some who suggest that the Rosh never meant to say that Kiddush Pemakom Suda is Daraisa. Because that's still too much of a stretch, even though we just gave all those possibilities. But it's still hard to see how that should be Min HaTorah. So maybe he meant something else. Maybe he meant that he's addressing the question of whether there's any point in adding a bracha of Kiddush and Shul to help somebody who's not making Kiddush. So if you're going to say no, there's no point, so why would you say that? Well, maybe you'll say because without the Makom Suda, you don't have any mitzvah at all. But that's a little extreme. So it could be you could come at it from another direction. Maybe it's not more, it's less. But that maybe it goes to a different question. That if you're going to say that you're Yotze Kiddush Min HaTorah, you want to provide Kiddush Min HaTorah in Shul, so how are you defining Kiddush Min HaTorah? What are you providing for these potential Kiddushless people? You're not giving them Makom Suda, so what are you giving them? All right?
Well, it's a recitation of Kiddush, which, I mean, presumably they would have one if it's part of the Suda, but maybe the recitation they wouldn't be able to recite.
Okay, so what you're adding to their life is a recitation. And you said recitation on a coast, which may also be important, because a recitation, you could argue they already have. Because if they're ready in shul, they daven ma'ariv Friday night. So that already mentions Shabbos. So maybe that should fulfill Kiddush Min HaTorah. So maybe the Rosh isn't saying that it's all or nothing. Maybe he's just saying that adding another bracha ala kos right then is not getting you anything. Because if you're looking for the mitzvah min HaTorah, maybe you already have that with the tefillah itself. And if you're looking for the mitzvah derabanan, yeah, you're not going to have because you don't have the Kiddush Pemakom Suda. So you're just mishtahei, you're in no man's land. And maybe this is a unnecessary bracha. So it wouldn't be so much that it's all or nothing, it's just that whatever it's adding, you already have. Through the tefillah itself. So that's how some read the Rush. Now, the question is, does it work through all of the language of the Rush? That's if you want to take a look, you want to open it up. So let's just read the words together. So in the standard printing here, it's the top of the first column here in the Siman Hey in Parak Aleph. So he writes here, so he says at the top here, from the beginning, in Mehashta, Bibrach Lubatol, and Ein Shamarachim. If you don't have any guests who are eating in the shul, and they're eating in the shul, so it's a bracha levatal, it's in the Rush. Why should you make a bracha now? Nowadays, you don't have guests, it's a bracha levatal. So he writes, Rav Rabbi Yonah, Piresh, Te'eg a bracha levatal. No, not so bad. It's not a bracha levatal. The Hazam, Rina, and Kish, all bracha mesud, the Haidim of the Rabbanan. That this obligation of Kish, bracha mesud, is only the Rabbanan, Vasmachu, Rabbanan, Akroi, the Karos, the Shabbos on it. So this idea, the and the notion of Kirish Makom Sud is only the Rabbana. The Ikra Kirish Minatoru who could exceed the Krayulayayin the Snisa. So the main idea of Kirish Minatoru is to have the Chira on wine coming in. Hilkach Kevin Sheish Me'adam Shemi Yodim LaKadesh. So since there are some people who don't know how to make Kirish, no, will the Kaddish be sickness, the Kaddish Yotzi, they Kiddish Min HaTorah. They should fulfill Kiddish Min HaTorah. Vahav the Ka'amar in Kiddish Mokum Suda, and this idea that Kiddish has Mokum Suda, well, Mashm the Keperusha. So now the Rosh is talking, says, it doesn't sound like it. Because the language of the Gemara would sound like, the Mashma she'eino Kiddish Klal. The language ain't Kiddish Elev Mokum Suda, so it sounds more absolute than that. It sounds like it's not Kiddish at all. That's what it sounds like from the language of the Gemara, that this kind of Kiddush here, without the Suda, is not going to be Yosei. The whole question, as the Gemara says, about why do we need Kiddush and Shul, and the answer is, for the people eating there, why don't we just say it like this? It's more relevant to the generations. Somebody who doesn't know how to make Kiddush at home. Okay, fine. So, this other interpretation of the Rush, that he just means you're Yotzei Min HaTorah already, with the davening, so you're not adding anything with this Kiddush HaLakos, from some perspective, it's compelling. I don't know how well it fits the language. It sounds like the Rush's objection to the Ben Yona is that, no, it's nothing. Without Mokum Suda, it's nothing. So it certainly seems like that's the literal translation of what he's saying. Whether there is additional room to interpret differently, so that we'll have to explore a little bit more, because there certainly are those who see it that way. But just in the initial reading of the Rush, it seems hard to make that distinction. It sounds like he's saying that you are not Yotzei at all. So that question of being Yotzei Kiddush at all in Shul is a major issue. And that's something that we'll just introduce here, and then we'll have to pick up next time, and we'll quickly recap. That if you saw the Magen Avraham is on the list, the Magen Avraham, the beginning of Reish Ayin Aleph, so the Magen Avraham writes that davening in shul indeed does fulfill the obligation of Kiddush Min HaTorah. And that potentially causes major strife at home in the understanding of some of the commentaries. So that's something that we'll have to pick up on next time. But there was a major machlokas that was brought up by the author of the Noda Behuda in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch called Dago Mervava. He says, wait a minute, that if you have an obligation of Kiddush for women as well, the obligation is Min HaTorah. And if we assume the men are in shul and the women aren't, so we're creating divisions at home, because now, you know, the husband is going to come home, is going to want to make Kiddush for his wife. But wait a minute, he's only obligated Midrabana. He already was Yotzei in shul. She is more obligated than he is. He's obligated Min HaTorah. Uh-oh. So how do we address that? So that question is also one of the major points of entry into the whole discussion of what is Kiddush and what isn't on a level of Min HaTorah. So we will have to pick up with that next time. Just to quickly recap, so what did we speak about? So we explored a little bit more of interpretation of the pasuk of Zachar Yisrael Meshavah Fakasho, and what is its main focus, what does it include, what does it not include. Interesting to note that the Meforshim and Chumash for the most part interpreted as being about things other than Kiddush, and Kiddush seems to be a detail of it, and according to the Hag, not even included in it, only included as a smachta. According to everyone else, yes, included, but all the other details are a major machlokas. We talked a little bit more about how wine could be included, and Pasuk and Hosea, and Tavish Lapeh, etc. And we talked about the position in Tosus, which I mentioned, and get to explain much about it, but that Te'ima is Midra Abanim, but the Yayin is Min HaTorah. We talked about the Rambam's position about Mutzah and Tosef the Shabbos and Havdalah, and Rav Kook's understanding that when the Rambam says Havdalah is Min HaTorah, it means one or the other is Min HaTorah, so practically speaking, it's generally going to be Midra Abanim. And then we talked about this issue of Kiddush Makom Suda, and the possibility that that could be Min HaTorah, the drasha that the Rishonim bring, which has two different versions, tying it to the Karas of the Shabbos Oneg. And the major issue that the post can talk about, the Rishonim, the later post can talk about, how do we have Kiddush and Shul nowadays? In the time of the Gemara, they did it for the people eating in the Shul, which was already a Kiddush, because the one making Kiddush was not himself going to be Yotzei. So that was a whole introduction to the whole idea of Arvus and some interesting possible implications. But nowadays, if there is no Suda at all happening in Shul, so what's the point? So here the Rush quotes Rabbeinu Yonah that maybe it's to provide at least Kiddush Min HaTorah to people who aren't making Kiddush at home, and his assumption that Kiddush Makom Suda is not Min HaTorah. And the Rush disagrees. And why he disagrees, we saw was a topic of a lot of discussion, that some do say that he only disagrees because the Kiddush is not adding anything, because davening already to be Yotze Min HaTorah. So if you're going for Min HaTorah, you have it already. If you're going to the Rabbanan, you're not going to get it, so it's no man's land. But, as we know, that the language of the Rush is a little bit more towards the interpretation that he means that you're simply not Yotze at all without Makom Suda, and that's how he reads the Gemara. That could be for any combination of reasons that we discussed, but that seems to be the simple reading of the Rush. So if you assume that you are Yotze in Shul, like Morgan Avraham assumes, even without Kiddush, just with davening, so then that sets up its own problems as far as possible marital strife, or marital division. So God willing, we will pick up on that when we next resume Kiddush, which will either be tomorrow or Monday, depending on how much time we spend on Parsha tomorrow. So we'll start, God willing, with Parsha tomorrow, and time permitting, we'll get back to Kiddush, otherwise we'll play it by ear. All right, so I wish everyone a wonderful day. Should be only good things. And today is Yom Revi, the Shabbos. Keep that in mind. And I look forward to seeing you tomorrow. All right, Yeshikah.